It's Thursday, December 17th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, U.S. financial policymakers adjust interest rates for the first time in nearly 10 years.
I think all parties recognize that there must be a negotiated settlement to end the war or de-escalate the war.
A meeting hopes to make substantial progress to end the Syrian war. Also ahead, a group fights to end animal cruelty in Asia. Moviegoers will find joy at the theaters. It's all coming up on today's International Edition. U.S. central bank policymakers have concluded 2 days of discussions on what has resulted in a modest interest rate hike for the first time in 7 years. Some analysts say it could be the first of several additional hikes by the Federal Reserve, or better known as the Fed, in the coming year. Higher rates guard against inflation, but lower rates act as an economic stimulus when an economy slows down. International Business Times financial correspondent Owen Davis joins us to explain the timing of the move and what it means.
The markets have been expecting the Fed to raise interest rates for at least a year now, and there's been a lot of anticipation around this. The Fed saw a lot of positive economic indicators in the last month or two. Labor markets are improving steadily. The one thing that's not quite there is inflation, but what the Fed wants to do and what Fed Chair Janet Yellen explained today is to start moving interest rates up ever so slightly, so that if inflation does come around and the economy does start to heat up and get out of control, the Fed will have some room to maneuver and it won't have to raise interest rates suddenly and shock the markets.
And that gives them a little bit of ability to help control tougher times should they come back.
Right. And the Fed has been cagey about whether or not they're precisely thinking about that factor. But with interest rates benchmarked close to zero, there's not much room to maneuver.
As I was watching the U.S. markets, they're up about 1% as we're speaking. And it seems that the markets have expected this and built this in.
Right. At this Fed meeting, there were the highest expectations going into it from the market that the Fed would lift interest rates for the first time in 9 years. The Fed has been telegraphing this decision for the last month or two. Janet Yellen called it a live option in congressional testimony a couple weeks ago. So the markets were pretty well prepared for this. It would have really been a shock had they not raised interest rates this time around.
Now, they raised it by 25 basis points. For the average Joe out there, what does that mean?
That's 0.25%. So, you know, if you're looking at credit card rates that are 15%, 16%, something like that, this little 0.25%, 0.25% is not going to look like a whole lot. And it's not going to trickle into the economy, at least in terms of your average borrowers, not going to see huge cost increases on debt anytime too soon. Mortgages won't change terribly much, at least in the short term, because they're based on treasuries. Treasury bonds already have this priced in. These expectations have gone back months.
I know foreign markets look very closely at what happens in the U.S. economy because it is
right.
The largest in the world. How will they react to an increase in interest rates?
Well, again, a lot of this has been anticipated, and you've seen some moves in currencies that have seen this coming. But what this is going to do is make the dollar look even more attractive to foreign markets. You're going to see more capital pour into the dollar. The dollar has already been strengthening over the past several months, so this is going to continue a trend of a more expensive dollar. It's going to weigh on U.S. imports. It's going to exacerbate some of these emerging market challenges in attracting capital that have started to emerge in the last year.
Owen Davis is a finance writer for International Business Times. You can find all of his great work online. Owen, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks. I appreciate it.
Some economists have argued it's too early to raise the rate both domestically and internationally, given the sluggish state of some major economies. Well, time for us to check out our reactions online to the rate hike. International Edition's social media correspondent, G. Abby Lees, right here in Studio 22. Hello, G.
Hi, Jim.
Let's get started with what the Fed is saying on Twitter.
Sure. The central bank is on Twitter at Federal Reserve, and the account has been really active on Wednesday, as you can imagine. He shared a link to the streaming of the Fed chairwoman Janet Yellen's opening statement and her transcript. Now, Jim, I just want to add that neither Yellen nor Vice Chairman Stanley Fischer are on Twitter. So getting into why the Fed is in the headlines, as we just heard from Davis, the bank raised interest rates for the first time since the financial crisis. And although raising it only by 0.05 percentage points is more or less of a symbolic move, many people are fretting over it.
Well, I'm sure that makes for an investing segment in itself. What are they saying?
Well, let's start with Dan Alpert, who is the managing partner of a New York investment bank. He sent out a number of tweets on the decision, and the latest one reads like this. Almost 100% of their, meaning FOMC, analysis is domestic factors. They are stuck in a pre-globalization mindset and ignoring all else. His handle is at Daniel Alpert. Reuters Insider tweeted this. Are there enough economy geeks out there to get some kind of hashtag Fed or hashtag FOMC to trend? And Jim, to answer that question, the answer is no. No. It's so sad because there are so many creative hashtags when it comes to, say, reality TV celebrities' outfits or memes. But when it comes to decisions that actually impact people's lives, there are so few reactions on Twitter. So I moved on to the news outlet's website. Here's one comment under a New York Times article. A reader in New Jersey wrote, economically, this move makes no sense whatsoever, period. Politically, the Fed has no choice. That opinion is resonating with a lot of Democrats, by the way, many of whom believe higher interest rates would hurt the job market and the working class. Jim?
Well, always interesting, and thank you for bringing us what's buzzing online. You can follow G on her Twitter account, at G Abby Lee, also on our programs account, at VOA underscore IE. This is VOA.
One of the world's great cities, the gateway to America for generations. VOA brings you New York in 12 rarely seen views. Presenting the 2016 VOA calendar, a gift from us, free for the asking. Just send us your mailing address in an email to calendar at voanews.com, and you can have New York's beauty grace your wall all next year.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's at voanews.com.
voanews.com.
Online news for a changing world.
This is VOA's International Edition. The way is now clear for the International Syria Support Group to meet at the United Nations in New York Friday following agreement in Moscow between the United States and Russia in meetings that took place Tuesday between U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry, President Vladimir Putin, and his Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov. The third round of talks could result in a draft Security Council resolution on a Syrian transition process, which is aimed at ending the 5 years of war. Differences remain between Washington and Moscow over the fate of Syrian President Bashar al-Assad, a Russian ally, and about which opposition groups to allow to participate in the transition process. David Leish, a Syrian analyst at Trinity University in Texas, told VOA's Victor Beatty, Mr. Kerry's remarks reflect an evolution in U.S.-Syria policy that now recognizes Mr. Assad cannot be removed short of a major military intervention involving U.S. forces.
They've come to realize in the interim over the last few years, especially with Iran and Russia emphatically wanting to keep Bashar al-Assad in power, that they can't do anything short of boots on the ground to remove Bashar al-Assad. So I think the administration has reluctantly come to accept that Bashar al-Assad will stay in power for some amount of time during some sort of transition process as preordained by the 2012 Geneva Communique, which is still the popular framework for political resolution to the Syrian conflict.
What does it all mean for this pending Friday meeting of the International Syria Support Group in New York?
It means that there's a lot of negotiating to happen. I think all parties recognize that there must be a negotiated settlement to end the war or de-escalate the war before concentrating on the bigger threat that certainly the regional international parties and certainly the United States feel in terms of the Islamic State. The decision that they have made is that in order to have a negotiated settlement of any sort, they have to put off the disposition of the president of Syria, Bashar al-Assad, till a later date. Therefore, that will not be an obstacle to even engaging in negotiations that may lead to a political settlement. Now all parties are aboard on that. Saudi Arabia, Turkey, of course, have been committed to removing Assad before rather than during or after a transition process. Many of the Syrian opposition parties are adamantly opposed to Bashar al-Assad continuing in power for any length of time. So this is something that has to be negotiated.
Well, Mr. Kerry did say of the Syrian opposition's position that the fact that Mr. Assad must leave as soon as peace talks begin is a non-starting position.
Because the government of Bashar al-Assad and Bashar al-Assad himself will not engage in a process of negotiation that puts him out of business. They see themselves continuing the long term. There has to be some sort of formula whereby the government of Syria and Bashar al-Assad believes that they have enough authority to continue on. At the same time, that a critical mass of the Syrian opposition believes that they've been empowered in terms of municipal or provincial autonomy. Whether or not both sides can be compelled to find that exact formula that'll work for each side, that remains to be seen.
David Leish, who says he has spoken with representatives of both sides, believes that a formula can be found. He says the key will be to satisfy the minimum demands of each side. In China, a hospital in Hong Kong has just conducted an unusual scan that attracted a large number of onlookers and posts to social media. In an article released Wednesday online, a moon bear was sedated and transported to the hospital so it could go through a CAT scan machine, which is normally used by human patients to try to find the cause of a nagging and mysterious medical condition. A veterinary doctor treating the bear for the rescue group Animals Asia requested the scan, and despite the bear's large size and the unusual request, Animals Asia says it was charged no more than a human patient. In addition, the hospital also provided a further series of scans free of charge. About 10,000 bears face painful daily extractions of their bile, which is used for traditional medicine in that country. Animals Asia is a group working in China and throughout the region to rescue and care for such animals subjected to cruelty. And Animals Asia founder and CEO Jill Robinson is with us to describe the work that her organization does.
Well, Animals Asia was founded in 1998 after I'd been working for the International Fund for Animal Welfare for about 12 years and really realized that I wanted to focus on the horrific practice of bear bile farming in predominantly China and Vietnam. I also had a great passion for companion animal work, and of course in a continent where dog and cat eating is prevalent, I felt that we could be recognized as a local group working from inside the country on programs that would have our work recognized as being respectful and sensitive and you know, able to work with local groups too. So we had a program of, called Dr. Dog, which was an animal therapy program going into schools and disabled centers and hospitals, etc. And I appreciate that some of your listeners may say, well, this is culture, this is tradition. But I should point out that we work in China, especially with 150 local groups, local Chinese groups, who also believe that dogs are not appropriate for the dinner table because of how much they help humankind in Asia and across the world. We also have done multiple investigations of the live animal markets across China and brought out multiple papers and reports that we've passed on to the government, showing again the fact that these dogs, when they are ending up on the food table, in fact, they are probably about 99% of them are people's beloved pets or they're stolen from the street.
How large has your organization grown through the years?
It's become huge, actually. I never thought it would get so big, but we've got about 300 staff now working with Animals Asia across the world. Of course, we've got about 150 staff in China and another 70 or 80 staff in Vietnam looking after the bears, because we, of course, work against bear bile farming in both countries. And, of course, we have a captive animal welfare program, too, where we work with the administrators and the directors of zoos and safari parks to at least try to make life more palatable for captive animals.
There are some laws on the books, of course, in these countries against these types of practices. However, some of these practices do, in fact, continue. What are some of the difficulties that you and your organization run into to stop these things?
Well, I think obviously everything has a value, you know, and people are making money out of all these sort of practices. But, you know, we do see successes. I mean, we saw legislation or regulations coming out that prevented wild animal performances. But, of course, those rules are circumvented, and it's up to Animals Asia and other groups to just keep on top of this and keep trying to encourage the authorities to reinforce the regulations that currently exist. Of course, with bear bile farming, we come up against the fact that these bear bile farmers are going against the rule of law, they're making a profit, they're exporting illegally bear bile, you know, outside of these countries as well. So, I mean, there's any amount of problems that we're facing, but, you know, as I say, we're working as well with good authorities and with good animal welfare groups, and it's just a case of consistency and continuing the work until, you know, the government are recognising these laws are there to be enforced, and that benefits the country, not just in terms of a good reputation internally, but a good reputation across the international community as well. I think many people are, you know, really wanting to write China particularly off as a country that's egregiously cruel to animals, but there is a rapid animal welfare movement in the country, of which we're very, very proud to be part of.
Jill Robinson, founder and CEO of Animals Asia, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much, Jim. Thank you.
You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
Academy Award and Golden Globe winner Jennifer Lawrence stars as a woman who made her fortune by designing household products in a new film titled Joy. International Edition's David Byrd tells us that Lawrence teams with actor Bradley Cooper and director David O. Russell for Joy.
Christy, look at me. I want you to remember something, because a lot of times people get nice things and they start to think differently.
We got here from hard work, patience, and humility.
So I want to tell you, don't ever think that the world owes you anything, because it doesn't. The world doesn't owe you a thing.
Jennifer Lawrence reunited with director David O. Russell and Bradley Cooper, her co-star in Silver Linings Playbook and American Hustle, to tell the story of Joy Mangano, a Long Island-born housewife who found fame and fortune by designing household products. Mangano, a divorced mother of three, developed the so-called Miracle Mop, and in 1992 pitched it to the QVC television shopping network. It became an overnight success.
Hi, I'm Joy Mangano, and I invented the Miracle Mop. It's the original cotton self-wringing mop, therefore the most absorbent. It will clean that mess again and again and again. And
I'm Jennifer Lawrence says that she was inspired by Mangano's story and wanted to bring it to the screen.
There's so many impressive parts of her that she, and just about the story in general, about how kind of long it took her to finally decide, I'm not going to let this dream go. I'm going to keep fighting for this, no matter who believes in me, no matter who doesn't, no matter how many people say no.
You got the exact same outfit you had when you came in here.
I wear a blouse and I wear pants. That's who I am. I want to go on as me.
I want to go on as you. I hope you make it back. Joan, Cindy, say good luck to Joy.
Wow. You look great. Good luck today.
Oh, thank
good
you. Luck.
That's her. That's how she is.
Blossom, she should be in a skirt. She's got nice long legs. Show her legs. Good luck.
Joan Rivers wants me in a skirt, but I'm going to do pants.
Bradley Cooper says he actually met Joy Mangano, and he knew he wanted to make this film.
I was in the middle of doing a play, so then I knew that the real Joy was at the hotel I was staying at, so I went down and met her. So that's how I knew it was based on a real thing. But I also was very aware of the Miracle Mop. I grew up using that mop because QVC was also a huge part of my upbringing.
Director David O. Russell, an Oscar nominee for his last two films with Lawrence and Cooper, says familiarity with his actors makes for a comfortable set where more chances are taken.
You have a comfort level with each other that just means you can take new chances. Jennifer is more quietly powerful in this film than I've seen her. She's not loud. She's doing something different that I find very interesting. Bradley as well. You know, they both watched them grow up in the last 5 years.
Jennifer Lawrence, who has been nominated for a Golden Globe for her performance in Joy, says that Russell makes it easy to take chances in front of the camera.
And it's so wonderful working with David, where I don't have to think about anything. If he gives me a note and it sounds absolutely insane, I just do it. It's a trust fall, and it's wonderful.
Joy also stars Oscar winner Robert De Niro as Joy Mangano's father, Rudy. Melissa Rivers stars as her mother, comedian and QVC host Joan Rivers, and actors Donna Mills and Susan Lucci portray themselves. The film opens December 25th in the United States. I'm David Byrd in Washington.
You've been listening to International Edition. And while you can go to the movie theaters to find joy, we hope you find a little bit of joy with us each and every day. You can find some joy by finding all of the latest news and features at your fingertips in one convenient place, voanews.com. That's our website. Follow us on Twitter at @VOA_IE. It's a joy to be working with our director, Tracy Carter, and engineer, Dan Crafton. I'm Jim Stevenson. It's definitely a joy to have you be with us each day. Come back and visit and have a super day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States has continued to support the peaceful management and resolution of territorial and maritime disputes in the South China Sea. U.S. President Barack Obama reiterated this message during recent meetings in Southeast Asia, where he called for a halt to recent construction on disputed islands and submerged features in the South China Sea. We agree on the need for bold steps to lower tensions, including pledging to halt further reclamation, new construction, and militarization of disputed areas in the South China Sea, he said. China, Vietnam, the Philippines, Malaysia, Brunei, and Taiwan all claim sovereignty over some or all of the land features in the South China Sea. However, since 2014, China has engaged in land reclamation on 7 features in the Spratly Islands, where the Philippines and several other countries also have claims. The Philippines has recently brought elements of its dispute with China under the Law of the Sea Convention to an arbitral tribunal in The Hague. While the U.S. does not take a position on the territorial claims of each nation, it insists that all claims be based on international law and that differences be addressed peacefully through diplomatic and legal means. That's why, said President Obama, the United States supports the Philippines' decision to use arbitration under the U.N. Convention on the Law of the Sea to peacefully and lawfully address differences. The South China Sea is home to many valuable resources, including an important fishing industry. Vital shipping lanes traverse the area, carrying over half the world's merchant shipping tonnage. The U.S. insists that behavior by all countries uphold the principles of freedom of navigation and overflight, unimpeded lawful commerce, respect for international law, and the peaceful resolution of disputes.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com/editorials.